Hey guys, it's Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Cut the Fat Podcast. You can find more information about us at www.cutthefatpodcast.com, on Facebook, and of course on iTunes. In today's episode, we're going to take you guys on a field trip to my Sunday radio show called Your Prescription for Health, where both Blythe and I have the opportunity to interview Dr. Jade Tita and Dr. Keone Tita, the authors of the book The New Me Diet. Both Blythe and I are really excited about this interview, and we know you guys are going to get tons of really great tips that you can put to use right away. So enjoy.
Hi, my name is Blythe Ahlberg, and I would like to welcome you to the Cut the Fat Podcast. Visit us at www.cutthefatpodcast.com. If you're new to us, we suggest that you listen to the first 3 to 5 podcasts for the basic toolbox on fat loss.
I'm totally excited about this hour. I know you are too, Blythe.
Oh, yeah. This is my new favorite book. This is the book we're going to be talking about is the new source that I'm going to point people towards because it's really parallel with what Ray and I practice and preach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's called The New Metabolic Effect Diet. It's written by Jade Tita, Dr. Jade Tita and Dr. Keone Tita. And we have them on with us today. Jade, Keone, are you there?
We are.
Yay, hi,
hey,
guys.
How are you guys doing?
How are you guys? How you doing? Thanks for having us on.
It's our pleasure. Jade, will you give us a little bit of background about who you are so that our listeners know who's speaking?
Okay. Well, I think I can speak for Keone and I both. I think the best way to describe Keone and I is that we are part of a new trend in health and fitness. We are a hybrid health and fitness professionals, which basically means we combine several different modalities to help people reach optimal health and body composition. So we are holistic physicians, basically licensed in the state of Washington as primary care physicians. We also still do personal training every day, which is our first love. We do wellness coaching and lifestyle coaching as well. And then, of course, we have a clinic here in North Carolina where we practice complementary and alternative medicine. And we actually do that stuff, you know, every day. Our week consists of all of those things combined, and we feel that that is really the best way to practice medicine for us and the best way to deliver health care and optimal body composition to our clients and patients, kind of taking this more holistic approach and meeting them on several different levels.
I think that fares well with our philosophies as well. Okay, so you wrote the book, The New Metabolic Effect Diet. Let me ask you this. Why did you guys feel the need to write another weight loss book? Because there are so many out there. Mm-hmm. What kind of makes this one different?
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad you guys asked that question. And, you know, part of the thing that Kelly and I have seen, you know, over the years is that really you've always heard the statement, you know, that diets just don't work. And that's kind of the thing that is kind of the common dogma, the common mantra out there in the world right now. And what Kelly and I recognize is, you know, diets actually do work. The problem is that they only work for certain people. So the idea is that it doesn't matter what diet you give somebody, anyone can find someone who did well on a particular diet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so with that recognition, we basically said, look, in our clinic, we don't treat people as one size fits all. You know, we don't give everybody the same exact diet. Part of the reason we get results is because we really, you know, work with the individual. And so we were like, you know, there are no diet books out there that really speak to this truth that we are all as different on the inside chemically as we are on the outside physically. And when we realize that we're all so different chemically, then we have to realize that we all require a different dietary approach. And we believe that that particular diet book did not exist. And so that's why we wrote this book.
Guys, I think that's really cool because this book actually specifies different body types, and you can actually you know, read the book. It's a very easy read, number one. You can go through the book and figure out what body type you are and kind of get you started off on the right direction on what type of diet will work for you.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. You know, part of the thing that I think Kelly and I have tried to do, and I know that you guys kind of see this the same way, but one of the things we have noticed in working with people, and whenever you talk to fat loss experts, I think one of the key things to key in on when you're talking to someone who's an expert in fat loss or weight loss is to understand and look closely, are they treating everyone the same? Because I think if they are, then on some level they probably don't have a huge amount of experience dealing with people with deranged metabolisms. Because you can treat an athlete, you can tell an athlete, go on a low-carb diet or go on a low-calorie diet, eat less and exercise more, they will respond. You can say that to a teenager, and they will respond. You can say that to most 20-year-olds, and they will respond. But when you get people who are 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old and up, and you tell them, eat less and exercise more, their body no longer responds the same way. And that is a key distinction between what is the common dogma out there and what we need to kind of change to. And we feel like this book is beginning to do that by stratifying people into these different types that you're talking about.
I think it does a really good job of that. I mean, going, and we'll talk about those types here in a minute, but it even gives a questionnaire that helps you determine which type you are. I think that's one of the, I think that's a very useful component of the book because people can, I mean, they're real simple questionnaires, but it only takes but a few minutes to go through and do them. But once you have your kind of burning type, your
we call it the burner type.
The burner type, right.
Yeah, and some people can refer to this as a metabolic type. And just a way to think about this real quickly to get everyone set, obviously there is no way to stratify people into three different groups. So what we do is we help you understand a little bit about your metabolism and put you into a particular group that is a mere blueprint of your metabolism. But it doesn't mean that that's exactly how your metabolism works, but it is a jumping off point to understand how your metabolism responds. And as you go through the program, you will end up at a unique diet specifically suited to you and your metabolism. And that's kind of the difference. So there are these three types, but those things, you know, are not, 100% in their use. In other words, we will encourage people, and the program does encourage people to find their own metabolic type, and it teaches them to do that.
You even start off in a more general approach saying that there are really two types of people. There's the fat store and the fat burner. Can you kind of go through the hormonal pattern for each of those different types of people?
Yeah. And Kelly, why don't you go ahead and jump in here. And, we sound a lot alike, Kelly and I, so but I'll let him go ahead and jump in and take this question.
Hi, Kelly.
Yeah, so the types that we have there talk about the fat burner and the fat store.
Yes.
It's really interesting. What we start off with is we tell people that everything you do in your life sends information to your body, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're eating a diet that is very high in sugar, you're sending a signal to your body that tells your body that we're going to store. We're going to store fat. We're going to store nutrients. And that hormone is insulin. Now, some people become resistant to that insulin, and over time, they can no longer burn fat at will. So go ahead, Jay. You want to talk about the other one?
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing is if you take diabetics as a model, you know, so if we look at diabetics, most people know about diabetics and that they can't handle sugar. But what happens is the first thing they lose is the ability to burn fat, and then their body is primarily working on sugar. And later, they begin to lose the ability to burn sugar. So we basically say everybody is really either a sugar burner or a burner who burns, you know, a mix between sugar and fat. And if you're burning sugar, that can be a problem because certain types will actually grab sugar from their muscle tissue, depleting their muscle tissue, and that's what we call the muscle burner. So these people, there's a common name for this. It's not necessarily the most politically correct term, but it's called skinny fat.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who are thin but have a deranged metabolism, low muscle, and higher fat stores. But they look to the untrained eye as skinny individuals. So people would say, oh, they're healthy. But then there are other types of sugar burners who work on sugar primarily through food. And so they're constantly seeking sweets. and starches and carbohydrates and craving those things constantly. And in both of those particular individuals, they are not able to burn fat effectively. Therefore, they end up having a body composition that makes them, on the one hand, for a sugar burner, kind of round and obese looking, and on the other hand, in a muscle burner, kind of skinny and flabby. And essentially what we're trying to do is we're trying to, make people healthier, and we do that through optimizing body composition, moving them into more of a fat-burning physiology. So we are either sugar burners or fat burners, and sugar burners need to be work very hard to begin to burn fat again, and that's the distinction.
Yeah, the other point to add to that is that, putting people into three types is really nothing new in science and medicine. As far as Western medicine goes, you know, we have the mesomorph who tends to be more balanced. They're the mixed burner. We have the ectomorph who tends to be more of the skinny person, tends to burn muscle, and we have the endomorph. So these, looking at those three types, it's kind of very similar, gives you a better idea.
So you guys, I know you spend a lot of time talking about how food is really information. It kind of goes against the standard model for weight loss, doesn't it? Which is based on the law of thermodynamics, which states that calories in versus calories out will determine whether or not you lose fat, gain fat, or maintain weight.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that I think really will empower people and our patients. Because when you tell somebody that every time you eat, you have the opportunity to tell your body to burn fat or to store fat. You have the opportunity to tell your body to stay young or age slower or age faster. I mean, people look at you and they say, wow, I didn't know that was true. So every time you eat, you have the opportunity to send those signals to your DNA and tell your genetics that to express themselves in a healthy way. That not only goes for diet, that also goes for sleep. That also goes for appropriate sunlight. All this information we get from our environment will make you a healthier person if you give them the right signals. The one thing I'd like to say about that, though, is, you know, exercise and nutrition, sunlight, appropriate air, all these things are very, very powerful medicines. But inherent in that definition of something being a medicine, it is also a poison. So Jade and I want people to use these medicines in an appropriate way so they don't degrade themselves.
I think you stated that in a way that really resonates with people. That's so self-explanatory, just the way you stated it. And that's what I like most about your book, is that you guys state things in such a way, it's such an easy read, and it really is easy to understand.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate that so much.
Yeah,
we love what you guys are doing.
And that really does, that philosophy really does speak to the difference between weight loss and fat loss, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
It really does. And here's another interesting thing to kind of key people into, because I think you're right, Ray. What happens is people often go to that. They say, well, look, it all comes back down to calories because of the first law of thermodynamics. But the fact of the matter is another law of thermodynamics. It's the second law of thermodynamics. And what it says is machines are not efficient, nor is the human body. So that we are not J.J. Virgin, who you may know, uses a term. She basically says that we are not bank accounts. The human body is not a bank account. It is a chemistry lab. And that speaks to this second law of thermodynamics that essentially says we are inefficient machines, and certain things can help us burn fat more efficiently, and certain things can make us burn fat less efficiently. And that speaks to this idea that when you're looking at things from the first law of thermodynamics or a calorie-only model, what you're speaking about is weight loss, okay? So if you go on a low-calorie diet, you are going to probably lose weight. However, weight loss does not equal fat loss. And what happens is if you go on a weight loss diet and you are a pear shape or an apple shape, you're going to become a smaller pear shape or apple shape. If you go on a fat loss diet, you are going to become a different shape altogether. And that is the difference, is that we need to really switch our language to the fact that weight loss does not equal fat loss. And at the same time, a healthy diet does not always equal a fat loss diet. However, if you have fat to lose, a fat loss diet almost always equals a healthy diet. And these are distinctions that people really need to understand when we're after body change, because there's no doubt about it. Lose a little weight, you're going to become healthier. But if you want true body change, you have to go out about this a different way.
Thank you very much. I mean, I think that was well said.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well said. And we have people calling asking about the book. The book is called The New Metabolic Effect Diet. It's all over the place, right? I mean, I already did a search on Barnes & Noble's, and it's
everywhere.
It's in all the Barnes & Noble's in our area, I know.
Yeah.
And you'll see it on the cover. It says The New Me Diet or The New Metabolic Effect Diet. It's by Dr. Jade Tita and Dr. Keone Tita. And you guys can also get it on Amazon.com. Where else?
Yeah, you know, essentially it's at all the major bookstores, Books A Million, Borders, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com. I'm pretty any major bookstore is, carrying the book. We're really excited about it. We were honored. Time Magazine ranked us top 10 notable diet books of 2010, which was a great honor to have. And so
awesome.
I think it's picking up some traction.
Hey, Jade, if people want to get some more information and maybe get a little bit of a taste of some of the information that you guys provide, where can they go online?
Well, we actually have a blog. It's on our website, metaboliceffect.com. So that's metaboliceffect.com, and you can link to our blog there. We have lots of different articles on, this new, what we call the new fat loss lifestyle, how to kind of make weight loss into fat loss. And also, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter. We put out a lot of information all the time on those particular, places as well. And we encourage people to, look us up as well. We like to answer questions, get questions from people. So those are the key places. And one thing I'll say about that, which I know you and Blythe and Hunter share with Kelly and I, is really, I think, and I would say this to all your listeners too, I think it's time for all of us to we have to understand that we as people who are passionate about health and fitness really need to take on this obesity epidemic in a different way. And so I would say we want to connect with as many people as possible who are passionate about this goal and will help us spread this new word, because I think, and Kelly and I have seen, it makes a huge difference. And all of us together, if we, it's mine and Kelly's dream that we can begin to make a dent. So we're hoping people get in touch with us, and let's work together to take this thing on.
The other place that they can find us is we, on Fitness Magazine, we write monthly for them. And in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Patients, we have an exercise column in there monthly. And those things you can find at most bookstores and health stores also. These are periodicals that are there.
Thank you very much. All right, if you guys want to hang in there, we got to go to break, and we come back, we're going to pin you down and ask you about aerobic activity and what you guys think of that. All right, hold on. We'll be right back.
It's back to Your Prescription for Health with Ray Heinrich, Blythe Orberg, and Hunter Thompson. Dr. Tita mentioned having a deranged metabolism. Is that an evil thing?
How about it, Jade? Is it evil?
Well, here's the thing. It is fairly insidious in terms of what it, what a damaged metabolism can do to people. And I think what happens is we all become frustrated because, as I was saying before, when you're younger, your metabolism seems to work just fine. Kelly and I like to say, when you're a teenager, it really is 90% just keep moving. As long as you're moving, you don't have to worry so much about what you eat. But as we age and we get into the 30s and 40s and 50s, that ratio begins to reverse. Now it's 90% about what you eat and 10% about exercise, and the exercise becomes more about maintaining muscle mass. And that's a key part when we talk about deranged metabolism. Muscle mass has everything to do with that, which calls into question the aerobic exercise model in general, because what aerobic exercise is very good at is helping you lose weight, but it is non-discriminant in terms of what type of weight you will lose. It will burn some fat, yes, but it also will strip the body of valuable muscle, and that is a very important thing for people to understand.
Yeah, the one thing Jade and I talk about in our talks is we say, let's take two extremes of elite athletes. Let's put a marathon runner right beside a sprinter. They're both very lean individuals, but who has more muscle? Who burns more calories during the workout? Definitely the marathon runner, but who's actually a healthy individual in most all parameters? The sprinter.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and I wish we could have a visual here. I wish we could send people to a visual of what a sprinter looks like right next to a marathon runner, like a world-class marathon runner. Because it's disturbing to see the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the other thing that it's amazing what that does to the person's metabolism, the long-distance slow-mo running, it can really, if you're not careful and you don't get enough rest and let your body recuperate, which a lot of these hobby runners don't, we see a lot of them in our clinic, you're going to derange your metabolism. And one thing, I just gave a talk up in New Hampshire about bone health and exercise, and it's really interesting the way the body responds to that long-distance running. If you do that long-distance running, most people think that's going to be very good for your bones. It actually, in the long run, will break them down. Your bones will not respond to that repetitive jolt. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. That's just another aspect.
So why, you know, if calories do count, why doesn't aerobic activity work for you?
Yeah, it is true. Calories definitely matter. You know, there's no getting around that. Calories matter. But what Kelly and I would say is hormones matter more. So when you think of weight loss, you know, people think of calories. But when you think of fat loss, we need to start thinking of hormones. And when I say hormones, most people, most of your listeners are going to think in terms of estrogen and progesterone and testosterone, those kinds of things. But when I say hormones, I'm speaking more globally about hormones like insulin and cortisol and adrenaline and noradrenaline and those kinds of things. Dopamine and serotonin, these are hormones too. Doctors will prescribe them for people with mood disorders. But the idea is that hormones control things like motivation. They control things like hunger, cravings, energy levels. And so if we take care of the hormones and balance the hormones, the calories automatically take care of themselves. And, you know, I know Blythe is a natural physique competitor. I work with natural physique competitors all the time. Kelly and I have done that ourselves. And one of the things that happens with natural physique competitors is they don't necessarily always count calories, but they eat in a particular way that keeps their calories low in general, but also helps them maintain muscle mass. So it really is an argument of calories versus hormones. Both are important, but hormones are perhaps more important.
Jade, your wife's a competitor, isn't she?
She is. My wife, Jill Coleman, who's a natural physique competitor, and, you know, she's taught me a ton about, you know, that lifestyle. And you know, Blythe, how it is. I mean, when you're in this world, one of the things that Kelly and I learned very on in medical school, in a lecture someone said, Dr. Burkett, who discovered the Burkett lymphoma, had made a statement. He said, if you want to know where if you want to know about disease, look for places where it does not exist. And in the natural physique development world, this is the only population on the planet that knows how to burn fat at will. Everyone else is storing fat at will. These groups of people are burning fat at will. So it is really interesting to kind of look at what they are doing and mimic their behaviors, because they have something figured out chemically about what it takes to burn fat and develop real body change.
Yeah, I think I turn people off a lot of times by mentioning body building. But really what I mean is building and maintaining muscle mass so you can burn fat at will.
That's right. And I think a lot of people get scared, especially women will get scared of the idea of putting on muscle. But again, if you kind of go back to that skinny fat model, what will happen is that, you know, over time, if you don't have muscle on your body, you are going to develop a flabby, soft look. Whether you're skinny or not, that is not a desirable look for women. Muscle pulls the connective tissue tight to the body, tones the body, makes the body smaller. And so we really should be really thinking about, that's what fat loss is. It is weight loss without the loss of muscle.
And I think it's worth noting also that we're now beginning to see more and more research suggesting that having a good frame of muscle in your body can play a very important role with immune system function as well. And people who are hospitalized and who have lost a tremendous amount of muscle mass have a tendency to have higher morbidity and mortality rates than people who have a good frame of muscle mass. So it goes well beyond just overall metabolism as it pertains to fat loss, but also to immune system and who knows what else.
It absolutely does. Kelly and I actually just saw the most recent article in Townsend Letter that we wrote on how muscle can be seen as an immune organ because it provides the reserve of glutamine, which is food for the immune cells, among other things that it does. But absolutely, muscle is not just about looking good. It is about feeling good and living longer. And we really need to kind of think in terms of our goal should be fat loss, muscle gain over time, or at least maintaining muscle.
Okay, so if we're not recommending standard aerobic activity for weight loss, or fat loss, what types of activity are you recommending?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And part of the thing I would say here is that, again, we need to make the distinction. Kelly and I don't want people to think that we're 100% against aerobic exercise. It's just that aerobic exercise is healthy exercise, but it is not ideal fat loss exercise. So some types of exercise are healthy. Some will help you burn fat better. And when we think about fat loss and hormones, the types of exercise that are going to adjust hormones for favorable fat loss are going to be things like sprint training, interval training, weight training. And a lot of people will get a little bit scared of that kind of stuff because the idea is that that is intense, scary type of things to do. But what Kelly and I say is that really what we're after is everyone can do this. We talk about exercising to the point of discomfort. And essentially what that is getting the body into a place where it will respond. The way I like to kind of think about this is if we are going to learn a new instrument or we're going to learn a new language, what's going to happen is we're going to have to practice that over and over again. And if we want to be the best piano player, we can't play chopsticks every day. We have to graduate to Mozart and Beethoven and that kind of thing. It's the same with the body with exercise. What you have to do with exercise is you have to push yourself to that uncomfortable place so that the body responds. If you just get used to your exercise and do the same thing over and over again, it won't respond. These three types of exercise, interval training, sprint training, resistance training, force the body to become more metabolically efficient. And that's what we're after.
And you guys call that the metabolic spark workout, right?
Yeah, we refer to it as the metabolic spark or the metabolic effect. And for most people, you know, what this means is that there's certain types of exercise that you can make the effects of the exercise last. So Kelly and I will say, when would you rather burn fat? Do you want to burn fat during the hour or so that you're exercising, or do you want to burn fat when you go home and sit on the couch and watch TV? Well, if you do exercise a particular way, you generate what we call a metabolic effect that can last long after the exercise is over. This is much like dropping a stone into a pond and watching the water ripple out. It causes an effect that can last actually up to 24 to 48 hours. And this is research based on a study by Schwenk et al. That was published back in 2002. It really changed the way Kelly and I viewed exercise forever. And so this metabolic effect is something we should all be after. Rather than just thinking about what happens during exercise, which is a calorie-centered approach, we should be thinking about what we're doing after exercise, which is a hormonal approach.
And think about the sprinter and the marathon runner or the bodybuilder. You know, the sprinter does their thing. They only exercise for seconds to 2 minutes, and they do a lot of rest to allow their body to have that afterburn effect afterwards. The marathon runner, you know, they exercise for hours and hours, and during those hours, they are burning fat. But really what we want is we want to reduce the exercise so it's more anabolic instead of catabolic, and then we want to incorporate the rest. We want to breach that aerobic zone. We want to go a little bit anaerobic and come down, and when we rest, we're going to burn fat after that. So if you just think about that sprinter and the marathon runner, who exercises less, who's leaner, who burns fat more efficiently?
And Keone, I want you guys to just because I think this is an important factor for a lot of our listeners, because a lot of the ladies out there, they really do fear looking like a bodybuilder.
Well, yeah.
And so, you know, I'd love for you guys just to expound upon that, because the truth is most people don't have the genetics to end up looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger or, you know, a lot of these physique competitors up on the stage. Am I right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And part of the thing about this is here's what I think people need to focus on. If you look at female athletes, let's look at, you know, Sharapova in tennis. Let's look at Mia Hamm in soccer. That's really what we're talking about. We're talking about athletic physiques. We're not talking about muscle-bound, you know, people who are using, you know, steroid enhancement. What we're talking about is natural muscle. And you can look in any sport, if you're a woman, look at any athletic woman, and you will see that that's what happens when you exercise for this metabolic effect. Kelly and I are definitely two people that we're some of these people that we get asked the same question as I know you and Blythe do all the time. Am I going to bulk up? And I think a lot of personal trainers and people like that will their immediate answer is no, you won't bulk up. You can't because you don't have the hormones. And that is true. What bulking up is in a female is putting fat on are putting muscle on underneath fat. It's kind of like putting on a jacket over two sweaters. You may appear bulky, but the muscle is actually making you more efficient in the end. And really, when you exercise for this metabolic effect, what you're doing is you're burning fat. So you can't get bulky because you're taking off fat while you're putting on muscle. And that is really an important concept for women to think about. Testosterone, by the way, for women, if it's done, if you get it through exercise, it's going to keep you lean, tone, smaller, and your body is going to be tight to the touch. That's something that all women want.
Right, and I think something that people out there, when they think about natural physique competitors, you think that these people are big. Most of the girls that I know who do this, including myself, you know, depending on your height or whatnot, I'm 5'3 and maybe 103 pounds when I compete. I look huge standing up on stage next to all the muscular girls that are also between 5 foot and, you know, 5'8 maybe. And probably the heaviest person up there is 130 pounds or so. That's not a big person. They just appear big because they're lean. Now, most people aren't going to try and achieve that look either. You know, most people want somewhere in the middle. And bulking up, you know, if you're not genetically predisposed to being an incredible Hulk-style type person,
right,
you're not going to be.
And
you will know that by now. By this stage of your life, you'll know.
Yeah. And we all talk about this on the podcast. We all say, you know, the good news or the bad news is change happens slowly. The good news is change happens slowly. So you're not going to, even though you're not going to lose 5 pounds in a day or put on 5 pounds of muscle in a day, you're also not going to put on 5 pounds of fat in a day or lose 5 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, you're not going to wake up one morning like busting out of your clothes
right.
as the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
And I think another way to kind of look at this is people tend to relate to celebrities, you know, so they really relate to celebrity women. So have you ever seen some of these, you know, shots in People Magazine and Us Weekly and things like that, some of these unflattering shots of, you know, some of these female celebrities, what you'll find is most of them are women who don't, most of the unflattering shots come from celebrities who don't lift weights. You won't see these kind of shots on a Jennifer Garner or a Jessica Biel because they
right.
train with weights, but you will see it on some of the more skinny fat, very thin celebrities. And so that's one great way for women to think about this. You don't see those people in unflattering shots because they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the skinny fat, you know, typically they look okay with clothes on, but then when they get the unflattering shots on the beach, that's when you can really see the difference. And it's not just about the aesthetics of it, though, and I think that's just a key point, is that these people can't feel good either from an internal perspective, because from a biochemical perspective, skinny fat is telling you something very important about your body. So,
absolutely.
All right, well, we do have to take a break. When we come back, looks like somebody else is online there. We'll take them, and we'll continue our discussion, maybe get back into a discussion on diet because it's so important. You guys hang in there. We'll be right back.
Your prescription for health with Ray Heinisch, Blythe Hallberg, and Hunter Thompson. Dr. Tina said you can't play Mozart on the piano every day, but when it comes to health, you need to play every key.
Thank you very much, Mike. All right, welcome back to Your Prescription for Health. Guys, you still with us?
Yes, we are.
Okay, cool. We're going to go to Deborah. Deborah's back. Deborah, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions for you. First of all, I'm probably one of those people that sometimes could be called skinny fat.
Uh-huh.
You know, unless I get real, real skinny and dieting and exercise. Two questions. First of all, I noticed that dancers, most people that I, whose physiques I admire, they look like they're energetic and feel good, are people like swimmers and dancers. They're not real bulky.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering about things like T90X, where they scramble it. They do all the different kinds of training. That's my first question. My second question is, how do you get this hormonal metabolic testing done to see how your hormones are?
Let's start with that one, Jade. Are there tests that can be done to kind of assess people's hormonal balance?
Yes, there absolutely are. And actually, in our clinic, in Minor Keone's clinic, that's what we use primarily to determine people's burner types, as we say. And there's a couple of them that are really good and actually fairly cheap. Kelly and I do urine testing and blood testing and saliva testing. But one test I can tell you that is one of my absolute favorites and is pretty cheap for most people is called an adrenal stress index. And what it really does is it's really measuring, kind of at a global level, your anabolic potential versus your catabolic potential. So basically, how well your body builds lean tissue and how much it is breaking lean tissue down. And it does this through looking at rhythms of stress hormones. And stress hormones are really important. It's one of the things that, Kelly and I like to say is when we talk about not paying attention to calories and paying attention to hormones, one of the things we say is, how many calories does stress have? And that always confuses people because they're like, well, you can't eat stress. And that's the point. You really cannot eat stress, but it does affect weight and fat loss because of what it does to hormones. And so in these tests, by assessing stress hormones, we can really do a lot to help the body repair itself from this skinny fat phenomena and help people learn how their metabolism works. There are several others, but that's one of my favorites.
In the absence of that test, though, here in the book, you have a questionnaire that people can go through to get an idea what their burner type is as well?
That's right. That questionnaire in the book, The New Me Diet, basically takes people through a brief assessment of how their body is reacting to stress. And so it also will tell you a little bit about your particular burner type. And it's really taken from our clinical experience, working with people, knowing how they function in the world, and also seeing these tests.
Very good, very good. Now, what are Deborah, did you have another question?
Yeah, I asked you about things like T90X. That's just an example of where they scramble all the different exercise, and I said that about dancers. Seems like too many dancers are in really good shape. They seem to stay energetic and healthy well into their 80s, people who are really, really into dancing.
Yeah, and actually, I'll say a couple things here, and it's probably going to disagree a little bit with your assessment of dancers and swimmers and things like that. Usually when you see dancers, they tend to be the ones who are at the height of their function are very young, okay? And as they age, if they continue to do a lot of dance and all that kind of stuff, they're not able to do it for a very long time. That's why you don't see ballet dancers who are, in their 30s. Most of them are in their teens and early 20s because it will begin to break down the body a little bit. Not so much, I don't know how much of it is the exercise versus the culture of dancing in general, which is a culture of, avoid food, stay as little as you possibly can.
Uh-huh.
Swimming is very similar. Swimming, it's a great healthy exercise. It is not great fat loss exercise because there's not a whole lot of resistance that water is applying. You can kind of think about, Keone just talked about doing a talk on bone health. One of the worst exercises you can do for bone health is actually swimming because it kind of mimics weightlessness like the astronaut. And studies on swimming and bone health show it actually degrades bone mass. So really what you want to do is you do want to move more towards these kind of metabolic conditioning programs that you're alluding to that combine the best of both worlds, that combine weight training with high-intensity interval-type training. And that's the best thing for fat loss. Matter of fact, I'll share briefly a study with you. Oftentimes as personal trainers, we get questions, what should I do first? Should I do my resistance training followed by my cardio or vice versa? Well, recently a study was done, published in the 2008 journal Strength Conditioning Research, that basically showed if you combine those two modalities together, in other words, do resistance training and cardio in one workout by going from one exercise to the next, to the next, to the next very quickly to keep your heart rate up, you will actually burn 10 times more fat from that workout over an 11-week period than you would doing the same workout that separated the two. So you do want to look at doing things in this combination way if you're after fat loss.
And how do you feel about the P90X program?
I actually like the P90X program, but, I think because it combines many different modalities, it is a metabolic conditioning program, and you will get a little bit of an afterburn. The one complaint that I would say about that is that, really, if you want to do hormonal exercise, you want to keep the workouts short and intense. And P90X can go a little bit long. What research shows is after about 40 minutes, your stress hormones will begin to rise unopposed from the growth hormones. And it's very important to keep hormones like cortisol in balance with growth hormone and testosterone and things like that. So I would say a P90X-like workout that is less than 40 minutes that pushes you to the point where you have to rest and then forces you to rest so you can do it again is the best way to do this new fat loss exercise.
Can I just quickly say something about the P90X? Watching all the infomercials and Insanity and, you know, all of those at-home workouts, you see the people on the infomercial working out with Sean T and really, really pushing themselves to where they're just drenched in sweat, whether it's 30, 60, or 90 minutes. But are you really going to do that by yourself at home, Deborah? You know, if you're going to do the P90X, I'm not saying it's not a good workout for you, but what I'm saying is you've got to be completely committed to pushing yourself for that 30 minutes. It's not for the faint of heart is probably a good way to put it.
Yeah, just to add to that, the P90X program, I would say, is a good program for younger people to do where their bodies can regenerate, have the capability of regenerating quicker and faster. The other thing I want to say about that is one thing that the research has shown about rest-based workouts where you go hard and you rest, P90X doesn't give you a whole lot of rest. It's like go, 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 as far as I understand it.
Okay.
But when you insert rest into the workout, and I'm not even talking about rest after the workout, which is very important, but when you start inserting rest into the workout, get to that uncomfortable place and rest as long as you need, your body does not become desensitized to it, and you will create a hormonal environment that will make you better fat burner later on.
Awesome. And I know in the book, you guys spell it all out. I mean, you have workouts in here. You explain the process of working out in a metabolic spark workout. You talk about the time period that you want to be working out with. You teach people how to do this type of activity in a very safe manner.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Kelly and I came up with a concept we call rest-based training, which sounds to people like an oxymoron because you don't normally think of rest and exercise in the same sentence. But the truth is, if I tell you to go run for 10 minutes as hard as you can, psychologically what you're going to do is you're going to pace yourself. Okay. Now, instead if I tell you, look, run for 10 seconds as hard as you can, you're going to be more likely to be able to push for that 10 seconds. Now, if I then tell you, you know what, just push to the point where you can no longer push and then rest until you can push again. What that does is put control of the workout in your hands. And what we found is that people actually push harder, get better results, and can do it very safely. So you can have my 96-year-old grandfather right next to, you know, an elite athlete, both of them pushing, resting, pushing, resting, pushing, resting, and getting the exact intensity required to get this hormonal effect. Now, for the 96-year-old grandfather, he might get to that point by just getting up, walking across the floor, whereas the athlete might need to do a 100-yard sprint. But the idea is this can be done very safely, but we need to kind of go to this uncomfortable place. That's why rest is so important.
Very well said, let me say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I did want to kind of take a step back and go back to speaking a bit about diet. You guys give a lot of good diet tips in here. Now, you had mentioned that the three different types of burners, what were they?
Yeah, so there's the sugar burner, okay, and then that's the person who is basically running off sugar primarily, has a very difficult time burning fat. There's mm-hmm. then the mixed burner who burns a good mix of sugar and fat. And then there's the muscle burner who tends to use muscle for energy.
Now, when you guys are kind of formulating a diet plan for somebody who's a specific type of burner, you speak a lot about carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have, I think it's an ingenious approach to carb counting. You can call it carb counting. You call it bite counting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, part of the thing that we've noticed and, you know, from working over the years with people is that, you know, more and more people, you know, they don't think in terms of measuring. They don't cook as much. They eat out a lot. And so we wanted to come up with something really simple to teach people how to get this hormonal response from their meals. And so what we did is we told them to focus on bites of starch. And this really depends on how insulin sensitive you are and how sensitive you are to adrenaline and noradrenaline, these kind of stress hormones. So that sugar burners who are, you know, have a very difficult time burning fat really need to focus on a lower carbohydrate content in their diet. We normally tell them they should be focusing on, you know, lean, clean protein sources, as many vegetables as they want, and 3 to 5 bites of starchy carbohydrates at a meal. The range comes from the fact that if you're doing, you know, white rice, you should be doing 3 small bites. If you're doing brown rice, then you do 5 bigger bites. Now, if you go to the mixed burners, they get a little more, 5 to 10 bites, because they're a little bit more insulin sensitive. The muscle burners get 10 to 15 bites, and that's partly because insulin opposes the action of the stress hormones that is such an issue for muscle burners. So, again, you have to be careful with this one-size-fits-all approach. This really takes into account and teaches people to adjust their carbohydrate intake based on their metabolic type. And over time, you can pay attention to your biofeedback tools like hunger, cravings, and energy levels, and adjust these bites of carbohydrates up and down to find what we call the carbohydrate tipping point. And what that is it's the amount of carbohydrate in your diet that will give you sustained energy and allow you to work out intensely, but won't go overboard and cause fat storage. And people really need to, if they do anything else in fat loss diet, they really need to work hard to discover what this carbohydrate tipping point is in their body.
Just for the listeners out there, you guys do mention the bite rule, which is great. I think it's an easy way for people to count without truly counting. And you also recommend certain foods. You've got recipes in here. You've got workouts in here. I mean, this is an all-inclusive book. And, you know, for under $30, you get a wealth of information.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that, Blake. One of the things I think for the listeners who are you know, kind of Kelly and I, to kind of let people understand, Kelly and I, and I'm sure you guys as well, being professionals in this field, we really didn't like the idea at first that the book was called a diet book, you know, because it kind of has a negative connotation to some degree. However, when you put diet in the title of your book, it does get a lot of people looking at it. But the book is, like you said, it's a lifestyle book. So it really teaches people all the other things that are impacting body composition change. Stress does not have calories, yet it drastically impacts body composition and weight loss and fat loss. Sleep does not have calories, yet we know if we don't get enough sleep, we're going to be craving and have low energy, and it will impact us. You know, we have got to learn that fat loss, this fat loss lifestyle, is about more than bank accounting. It's about more than calories. It is about all these environmental factors that talk to our body constantly. Food, exercise, sleep, stress are information for the body, and people need to understand what that information is saying and how to deal with it. And that's really what we're trying to cover in this book.
Well, and we do thank you guys very much for coming on with us today and giving us all this great information. The name of the book is called The New Metabolic Effect Diet: Eat More, Work Out Less, and Actually Lose Weight While You Rest. It's available at all major major bookstores and on Amazon.com as well. Jade, Keone, thank you guys for coming on and giving us all this information. Hopefully you'll come on again in the future.
I really, really appreciate you guys having us on.
No problem. One more time, what was the website that people can go to for more information?
It's www.metaboliceffect.com.
Thank you guys very much.
Hey guys, it's Dr. Ray Heinisch again. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you guys for tuning in to the Cut the Fat podcasts. You can get more information about us at www.cutthefatpodcast.com. The music you're hearing is provided by the Grilled Lincolns. The song's called Something New, and I hope you guys enjoy. You can find more information about the Grilled Lincolns at www.grilledlincolns.com.
got something new.